You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Welcome to TMT's Unscripted Issue Podcasts. Are you ready to place your investment in virtual care? Today's guests discuss the pandemic exponentially accelerating the adoption of virtual care and heightening consumer expectation, which has led to health systems reimagining their role in virtual care, empowering those health systems to move beyond siloed applications to a comprehensive, whole person approach that consumers need across their healthcare journey. Get the skinny on the current and future state of virtual care, along with the unique position health systems are in to earn their place within the consumer circle of trust. Tune in now to hear Bruce Brandis, Senior Vice President of Consumer-Centered Virtual Care at Teladoc Health, and Dr. Lyle Berkowitz, CEO of Back9 Healthcare Consulting and Editor-in-Chief of Telehealth and Medicine Today. Let's get right into it.
Good morning, Bruce. Thanks for coming on to talk to us about what is going on with telehealth. It's been quite a year with the pandemic accelerating everything around virtual care. And we'd love to hear some of your thoughts on what do you think's changed forever versus pre-pandemic, pre-COVID. For innovators and digital health folks like us, this has been an exponential year. Things have jumped ahead. What do you think is going to stay ahead? I often think about through a lens of the three R's, regulatory changes, reimbursement changes, and just the regularity of day-to-day care. What's been your experience, thoughts, et cetera, that you've seen in the industry?
Great question. First of all, Lyle, thank you for having me. It's great to talk to you. And I think that's a really important question. This past year has just been a remarkable time. And through all the tragedy, I think a lot of people are seeing the opportunity for us to build a better healthcare system and to rebuild a lot of things about our society. But specifically today, when we talk about healthcare, it's worth reflecting on what has really worked for us and where should that equilibrium fall as we settle back in. And I think the things that have changed forever are two things that that I think are probably most important as it relates to telehealth and virtual care. The first is consumer expectations. I think the consumer, whether you want to say the toothpaste is out of the tube or the genie's out of the bottle, but now that consumers have had exposure to what a digital first healthcare experience looks like, just like the digital first experience that they have in every other area of their lives that they love so much, I don't think we're going to undo the fact that many consumers now expect, whether it be a digital first experience or a digital option for them, depending on what's needed. I think consumer expectations are changed forever. The other piece
we'll put into that third R bucket, right? The regularity. Consumers exactly. Now and doctors. See it as something that's a regular part of care.
And that was the second thing that I was going to touch on there is I think provider understanding and confidence that you actually can deliver great quality care virtually. And again, it varies depending on what that individual patient's needs are. But the concept for many specialties and for many interactions that we have, that a virtual interaction from a provider perspective is just as good or in some cases better than what they would do if they were physically together. So we'll put that into the third R that you have. In terms of regulatory, again, I think because of consumer demand and expectations and provider confidence in quality, I think we're going to see the regulations settle in a place where it just makes sense, where we can accommodate what is better care at a better price point, better experience. I suspect, and we're seeing it now, that will settle in with something that is radically advanced from where we were pre-pandemic. And then regarding reimbursement, I don't think that we expect necessarily that it's going to be complete payment parity the way it has been during the pandemic. But I also think we can look and recognize the value that is created through virtual care. And I think that the proper reimbursement So if you look at it in a fee-for-service world, the proper reimbursement, I think, will settle in where it should be. But the other part of that, by the way, is I think everybody now recognizes, perhaps we'll talk about this a little further into the conversation, we recognize the opportunity that virtual care creates for enabling health systems, for example, to move more aggressively into taking on risk and moving into value-based care. So that perhaps when you're fully holding risk, the reimbursement piece, you look at it with a different lens. And I think we all recognize we're living in both worlds, but I do think that reimbursement question would probably change a few years from now versus how we might look at it today because of the move to value-based care.
So let's dive into value. A lot of people think of Teladoc as working with large payers, employers, et cetera, going to the consumer. But you know, you're helping head up a whole division that focuses on hospitals and health systems. Let's talk a little, first of all, why do health systems need you? They've got their EMRs and telehealth, et cetera. There's your technology, the staff augmentation, and then what value are they getting? What is their ROI? Whether it be for urgent care or chronic care or preventive care, what value are they seeing? You mentioned if they're moving towards value-based care. So we'd love to hear you talk a little more about why they're using you, how they're using you, and the value that's coming out of that.
Yeah, so that's a great question. So in reality, we started working with large employers and health plans because they were the ones most active, apt to move quickly as we were building the business, who were ultimately paying the bill. What we're now finding is health systems are realizing that there is a remarkable challenge and opportunity at the same time. So for them, as it relates to virtual care, certainly historically, there were people providers who might have seen this as a threat, but I think more and more providers are recognizing the incredible opportunity that virtual care represents for them to thrive in a current environment, as well as to position themselves for the future. And I'll speak broadly. First of all, most health systems recognize that if the consumer is at the center of healthcare in the future, that healthcare is confusing. So that consumer needs help. There are lots of partners and potential partners vying for a seat at the table with that consumer, whether it be big tech companies, big retailers, health plans, or new entrants that are coming in, all arguably setting up to disintermediate or further disintermediate the local health system from that consumer. We see a tremendous opportunity for the health systems to lean in, recognizing their place locally in the community, the trust that they've earned over time whenever someone breaks their leg or has a heart attack. The real question is, how do you become in the center of the circle of trust all the time with those consumers? And I think that more and more health systems see this as a great opportunity. And there's really there's a strategic reason, and then there's also a compelling ROI reason as to why they need to be in the virtual care business, recognizing the confluence of physical care and virtual care. And I'll just cite off a few statistics of beyond the strategic reasons, that the reality is investing in virtual care pays for itself with great returns. Specifically in chronic care, we've seen where many health systems start with their own employees. They've seen as much as a 3.5 times ROI in the first year of launching virtual programs for chronic condition management. And now we're seeing them move into not only their employees, but taking that and applying it to patient populations.
Let's get clarity on that. So is that only in situations where they're at risk for that chronic population, or also in a fee-for-service, is there an ROI?
Well, let's start, first of all, for their own employees. Generally, most health mm-hmm. systems are self-insured. So clearly they are at risk for that population, which is why many start there, because there's a compelling ROI and they get the benefit. What we're finding is, as they're shifting their attention to patient populations, it actually serves them well in both worlds. So in a fee-for-service world, there's opportunity to see see this as an opportunity to extend your digital front door to connect with people who are chronically ill, in many cases commercially or insured by Medicare, and to shift that market share. So there's opportunity around that in a fee-for-service world. There's also, as they look to moving into fee-for-value, the opportunity to see this as an opportunity to get data, to understand how to fill in the blind spot on that they have about what happens the majority of someone's life when they're living their chronic conditions outside of the physician's office or outside of the hospital, to get those insights, as well as to have a mechanism to affect behavior change. So as they do take on risk, to go into these arrangements with the data that they need to be successful and the ability to affect behavior change with health nudges and other connected devices and technology and data science to help those people to be healthier. So as you look into ROI for chronic conditions for health systems, it does have a compelling place for your anywhere where you're already taking risk, but also there is an ROI and a strategic value for fee for service as well.
And also to clarify, is that based more right now on the telehealth doctors being available for urgent needs for chronic folks, or is the Livongo elements of monitoring and escalating, or have you already started combining those?
Well, it's actually the power of both. It's really being able to meet these consumers where they are. So when they're off living their lives and hopefully making their condition, their chronic condition, invisible to them or less visible as much as it can be, and just let them live their lives. And that's what Livongo does. But then recognizing when something might not be exactly right, when they may need to get their meds adjusted, or they may need to check in with an endocrinologist, the ability to do that on demand, which is what the Teladoc brings to the merger, really simplifies the experience for that person living with the chronic condition. So it's really a combination of both.
So, and I know how hard dealing with health systems can be. I lived and breathed in that for 20 years in a health system. I've sold the health systems, et cetera. One of the things that must come up, you mentioned initially they're reluctant, but one of the things that must come up is, wait a minute, we want our doctors to take care of our patients versus your doctors. And yet, you know, they don't have enough of the doctors. How have you reconciled that to the point where they feel comfortable trusting your Teladoc doctors to fill in at times and help out and feel like there's a seamless experience for everybody? Yeah,
well, first of all, we completely agree with them. They should use their doctors when they would like to and their doctors are available. And that is our model. We built an open platform. We are a technology platform. And each one of our clients, health system clients, can decide how and when to leverage supplementary expertise that we may have or availability that we may have through Teladoc physicians. So many of our clients, it goes first to their docs. And then if it's after hours or weekends or there's a specialty that they need a consult on that's not available through their facility, we can help supplement that. But it's really up to them. The other key piece of that is when their physicians, their employed physicians, also have gaps in their schedule. Through partnering with us, it creates a great opportunity for us to be able to fill in those gaps with where they can consult on cases potentially anywhere. And so it really creates a great growth opportunity as well for many of these health systems that we partner with.
Okay. So about 15 years ago, I wrote a paper, article, editorial that suggested health systems, if you don't get on the ball and start doing virtual care, you're going to wind up losing to these other groups who do it better. Suffice it to say, I might have been a little ahead of the curve. Yet now it's coming around, and instead of competing, you're helping facilitate. How far can it go? When we talk about this idea of whole person care virtually. Yeah, I love the concept of virtual primary care. There are not enough primary care doctors necessarily to have every single person be able to have, hours of time with them in the office, but they don't need that. In fact, it makes sense for a lot of folks to do their primary care, maybe if you're under 50 years old, completely virtually. Yeah, and I'm curious what you're seeing out there. Are the health systems in particular embracing that with their doctors, other doctors? Do they feel that it is more than urgent care or occasional chronic care? Can they have preventive care? Can they actually offer a full offering that way What do you think is happening in the atmosphere these days?
Yeah, well, you'd mentioned the concept of whole person care, whole person virtual care. And I think that's really the way more and more health systems are starting to think of this. How do we approach this for the totality of what a consumer or a patient's needs may be? And I think one of the challenges we've had historically is we've always looked at things in a very fragmented way based on the products that may be available or something that was available in a silo. And so, for example, people with chronic conditions, many people who have chronic conditions have multiple chronic conditions, as you know, and they have other needs that may go beyond their chronic condition. So if we're only looking at one dimension of a, whether we're a health system or a technology company, if we're only looking at one dimension of a person's needs, we're really not going to help that person to be as well as they really need to be and to simplify the consumer experience for them. So to approach it, and I see more and more health systems seeking this, is the opportunity to have an integrated platform that can address the totality of all of the needs, whether it be physical or virtual, for every condition. And as a byproduct of being able to have an integrated platform, to simplify the consumer experience and also create a much more hyper-personalized experience with the data that comes as a byproduct of having one integrated data lake that kind of can see everything that's needed about this consumer or this patient, so that I can actually understand how to zero in on what's needed exactly for them. So we think that health systems, leading health systems, are looking at whole person care and virtual care as it integrates with physical care across the continuum.
Are you finding that they want to get all that data sent into their EMR? Or perhaps they have an EDW or just want it on your system? What's been the traditional way to bring all that data together when you work with health systems?
Yeah, so the short answer is yes, it belongs in the EMR. But frankly, a lot of this experience and this interaction happens outside of the EMR when people are living their lives outside of the health system. So yes, we need to bring it into the EMR, but we don't need to be dependent on the EMR to be able to provide the level of care. But ideally, it's part of a broader data warehouse because there is a lot of additional information that frankly doesn't get captured in the EMR that is for me as a consumer, for example, if I'm struggling with prediabetes, documenting my food log, that may or may not be something that is appropriate to go into the EMR, but it's part of that consumer's experience. And I think the more we recognize that the EMR is a very important foundational component that we need to share that. And we certainly integrate the virtual care data into the EMR for all those right reasons to have a comprehensive view. But we can't be wholly dependent on the EMR that could potentially limit the consumer experience. And I think that's a great opportunity for us to think about first the consumer as a person and as a consumer, not necessarily as a patient. And the more we do that, it helps us look beyond just the EMR for the data.
Okay. In terms of whole person care, let's talk about specialty care for a minute. On one hand, we often talk about there's a shortage, it takes 6 months to get into a specialist, et cetera. And so being able to access someone online a little more quickly would be helpful. But how are your health systems handling that if there's already a 6 month wait to get in? Are they sectioning off some of them to become specialists and being virtual care experts? Are they just building into their system, or is it just a distribution where they're able to find specialists maybe across town that aren't as busy? Is there any secret sauce there?
Well, I think the latter is a great point. Imagine if you could eliminate the traditional geographical boundaries that have restricted access to a specialist and to care. If we can think back to the regulatory questions you had at the beginning, if we're not limited to our state, or our particular geography, if people are available anytime, anywhere, it all of a sudden opens up a world of possibilities for us to access specialty care in a much more timely and relevant timeline, as well as giving those health systems where those specialists may reside better control over providing the care that they want to be able to provide and the customer service that they want to be able to provide. So I think it creates a tremendous opportunity to accelerate access to care and also improve the quality, because now all of a sudden, you know, you can have a clinical center of excellence and be consulting on cases in rural communities, anywhere. And those people are now getting access to, you know, the best of the best to consult on their cases. And I think that we all can benefit from that.
Yeah. And expanding even further, you know, we're seeing some companies that, you know, Livongo has sent out devices, other companies that are sending out medications, et cetera. How aggressive are health systems going to be with respect to sort of somehow connecting, you know, the physical world with the virtual world, you know, providing medication devices, et cetera, to their patients? What have you been seeing?
Yeah, well, I think directionally, again, if it's all about the consumer and recognizing, you know, we talked about some of the new entrants who health systems are now competing with, who really do understand the consumer experience much better than we in healthcare historically have, and also potentially have access to a lot more funding and capital than traditional health systems. I think we're seeing more and more health systems, whether it be by build, buy, or partner, figuring out how to deliver an excellent consumer experience. And part of what the consumers expect is, you know, the opportunity to simplify all of these you know, areas of need that we might have. And ideally, for the health system to be, again, in the center of the circle of trust with that healthcare consumer, being the convener of all the care services and supplementary resources that are needed for that consumer to have a great experience and to be healthier.
Okay. So I think, you know, we've heard a lot about health systems, you know, that are forward thinking, are really starting to get more aggressive. They're working with Teladoc from a technology, strategic, you know, staff augmentation perspective. We hopefully have a lot of listeners who are with health systems. You know, what's your final words of wisdom advice for them, Bruce, on how to manage for the, you know, through 2021 and beyond in a world where we truly have seen a seismic shift where we probably expect, you know, 20-ish percent of care to be done online in general and in some specialties, maybe significantly more. Let's hear your final thoughts.
Yeah, thanks. I've had that question a lot recently, and in conversations I've had with a number of health systems, the discussion that we generally have is, hey, why don't we first focus on the strategic priorities and imperatives of your health system, not leading with virtual care or digital health for digital health's sake, but, you know, let's talk about what you're doing to try to shift commercial market share. Let's talk about what you're doing to try to move more meaningfully into getting closer to first premium dollar and take risk in value-based care arrangements. Let's talk about what you're doing to focus on consumerism in your markets. And let's also talk about your growth strategies and how do you grow not only market share in the current market that you have, but how do you expand into other markets potentially and perhaps do so without a bricks and mortar footprint? So as you think about all those strategic priorities you have, then layer in what's possible now with virtual care that wasn't possible historically before this moment in time that we have. It's time to reimagine how to address those priorities and what do you need from virtual care to enable that totally changes the paradigm. How do you become profitable at government rates? You know, how do you deliver care and democratize access to care to vulnerable populations that may be underserved today? So a lot of things that are very possible now. And in order to be able to deliver that, the only thing I would really emphasize to health systems is, look at this holistically. As you're building your virtual care strategies and platform, what you need is not to further fragment care by building a separate silo for each area where you may see need and opportunity. You really need a purpose-built platform for healthcare that understands interoperability, that understands scalability and clinical workflows. And so as you start thinking about what that platform is and the data science that's needed to enable a hyper-personalized consumer experience and looking holistically across the entire continuum of care from chronic conditions in the home to ambulatory visits in the office to complex care in the ICU and all points in between as people are just, you know, striving to lead a better and healthier life outside of the health system, you know, not thinking themselves as a patient, but just being a person, you know, how does a health system take control of their role in facilitating that? The opportunities have never been greater for providers and healthcare organizations to reinvent themselves because of what's possible with virtual.
Thanks. I think that's a great way to wrap it up. This is not a silo out there. This needs to be a part of your holistic strategy. And sounds like you guys have been having some great experiences with that. So thanks again for your time. Hope this was helpful to listeners. And that will be a wrap.
Thanks so much, Lyle.
We appreciate your tuning in to TMT's Unscripted podcast featuring Dr. Lyle Berkowitz, Editor-in-Chief of Telehealth and Medicine Today Quarterly Journal and Teladoc Health's Bruce Brandis, Senior Vice President of Consumer-Centered Virtual Care. Want to learn more or have a comment about the program? Send an email to info@partnersindigitalhealth.com or visit Telehealth and Medicine Today.